Hey y'all, Rob here. I just want to chime in really quickly before we jump into this episode. I have a few openings in my new executive coaching business, Trepidnaw Consulting. I work with business owners, primarily landscapers, to help them scale, systemize, and get their lives back. If you want to learn more, check out the website, robtrepidnaw.com. Thanks. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to The Adventure Cure. I'm your host, Rob Trepidnaw. This is a podcast where we will talk to true adventurers who have boldly set out to live a life of meaning instead of waiting for their lives to finally get started. So many of us have hopes, dreams, and desires that we never take action on. Perhaps you're breathing, but don't feel like you're truly alive. Maybe you're sitting on the sidelines. Here, we will have amazing conversations with adventurers, entrepreneurs, and all sorts of trailblazers who have escaped the daily grind by chasing something bigger. Perhaps they can help you take the next step to a more meaningful existence. Oh gosh, where to even begin? Y'all, I am so pumped for y'all to hear this upcoming conversation with the legendary Bob Goff. For the few of you who don't know who Bob is, he is a New York Times bestselling author of multiple books, including Love Does, Everybody Always, and Dream Big. Bob goes all over the country giving his awesome message, writing books, and encouraging people to live a bigger story. I read Love Does about 10 years ago, and Bob completely blew my mind with his boldness, his fearlessness, and his amazing stories. He never sits on the sidelines. Instead, he dives right in and builds a parachute later. Listen in on this conversation and learn how Bob has started a school to educate witch doctors in Uganda. Witch doctors, y'all. How to make big life-changing decisions, how to leave a legacy that'll outlast us, and tons of other tips that don't involve something huge, but maybe just the next bold step. Bob lives a bigger story than perhaps anyone I know and encourages all of us to challenge the status quo and not settle for the ordinary. He has that rare quality of being someone who dreams big dreams, but also has the gumption and wherewithal to actually pull them off. He's made himself an incredibly safe person too, which has helped him to walk others, including myself, through really hard things, as opposed to just preaching down on people and throwing them a Bible verse. It's really practical stuff. I found that I often like to be the one pushing people to try new things, but to push them to the edge of their comfort zone. But now that I'm friends with Bob, he does that for me. You gotta be careful spending time with Bob because honestly, he might just change your life. Bob's number one question he asked me is, why not? So anyway, y'all, let's go ahead and dig in. Welcome Bob Goff to the Adventure Cure podcast. Thanks so much for being here, Bob.
Hey, thanks a million. Glad to be on with you.
This is really amazing having you on here. So Bob, a big reason I started this podcast is thanks to your inspiration. So here we are. And so for the few people in the world who don't know who you are, I'd like to give them a brief description. A quick Google search tells me that you're the chief balloon inflator of Love Does, a recovering lawyer, best-selling author, and now a wine grower. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a retreat center called The Oaks, and we bring people there to just come and get better at whatever they need to get better at. And when the vid happened and everybody was shut down, we got busy and we planted a vineyard that'll be 50,000 bottles a year on a bad year and 100,000 on a good year. So we're really, I don't know a thing about wine, don't even like the taste, but it just seemed like it'd be a really fun thing to try. So we did in a big way.
It seems as if you're pretty much a professional at jumping into things that you aren't experienced in and then just take them to the next level, huh?
Totally. Like prone to excesses, like probably a lot of your listeners.
Absolutely. So Bob, can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on right now? I know you're growing some wine. We got 1,000 different ways we can go, but what are the things that you're really fired up about right now?
Yeah, biggest thing we've got going, we'll start early next year. We're opening a school for Palestinian kids in Bethlehem, of all places. And we'll be opening another one or two schools in, whether you think of it as Israel or occupied Palestine, depending on who you're talking to. But we just really want kids to get education. So we've got, this will be our 9th country. So that's what I spend a lot of time doing. The big chunk of time is spent with friends like you that are, we're just trying to learn together, all kinds of stuff. And then this retreat center called The Oaks, we have cattle and I think 27 horses and a vineyard and 60,000 square feet of people, which is awesome. So I get up there 4 or 5 days a week to do one thing. Today we're rototilling. because we're putting in vegetables, and we've got a food program. There's 1,500 Afghan refugees arriving in San Diego, and so we've got a food truck that delivers food to different people that have some food insecurity. So we thought, as a flyer, I don't know anything about, I've never grown anything, but we thought, well, we've got a big 100 acres, like let's go make some turnips or something.
That's awesome. And you have horses up there too, is that right?
Yeah, 27 of them right now. We train other people's horses, and then we have ours that we take people out on trail rides. And then every once in a while, somebody will get rid of a horse that they don't want, a really fast racehorse. And so we'll take it and we'll make other little baby racehorses.
Oh my, can you tell us a little bit more about that, the racehorse that you just got, that one that just didn't lose a couple of times, you got a good deal?
That's it. Yeah, it lost. It's won like hundreds of thousands of dollars as a racehorse, but it kind of ran slow, I imagine. I don't know. I've never been to a horse race, but it ran a little bit slow. So the owner said, get rid of it. And so I said, I'll give you $2,000. So now we got that horse too. We've got Secretariat's great, great granddaughter is going to have a little foal here in 60 days. We've got a couple other horses that will, breeding season's April, May. So we'll just get them. And then we have Angus cattle and Scottish Highlands, those fuzzy one with the bangs. So it's really fun. It's kind of like it's my own Tom Sawyer Island.
Oh, I absolutely love that. That is wonderful. Now, Bob, let's change gears a little bit. Can we talk a little bit about what you're doing in Africa right now with the witch doctors and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So in Africa, the footprint is in Uganda, where we have maybe four schools. The biggest one is 1,600 kids living at the campus, but we have schools and prisons and things in Uganda. We're also in Mogadishu, Somali, and some surrounding cities. But in Uganda, they have a practice of witch doctors. And the good version of that is referred to as traditional healers. And traditional healers actually play a really important function in society there. But the ones that go around the bend and become witch doctors and start sacrificing children, like that is where I'd get involved. And so when this was happening, nobody had ever taken on a witch doctor because they were afraid of them. But these guys are punks. Like, they don't have any of the power. And so we tried the case, Uganda's first death penalty case. And then from that idea of loving your neighbor and loving your enemy kind of collided. And I started befriending this guy who I put on death row and decided we'd start some witch doctor schools. And we don't teach witch doctors how to be witch doctors because they already know. We teach them how to read and write. And so we have quite a few students that have been through this, and they're all witch doctors, and they all walk away feeling a little bit more known. And we let them know very plainly, like, you sacrifice a kid, you're done. Like, that's it.
Wow. Now tell me, what happened with that guy that you became friends with? Did you still try the case? Like, what was the outcome?
Yeah, we actually tried the case and got this Uganda's first conviction, and the word went out to 42 million people. Like, you hurt a kid, you're done. There's no appeals. There's no anything. You're just out. You'll never be seen again. So Kabi went to Lazira, which is the death row in Uganda. There's 3,500 men on death row there. And then we just continued to meet. Every time I went to Uganda, I would go and meet, and mostly to learn from him, like learn how it came to pass that he's done this. And he really learned what he needed was forgiveness, which is an unlikely thing for the guy that put him there. But it isn't about me. It's what God was doing in Kabi's life. And it was really beautiful, the arc of his life. He eventually succumbed to a disease and passed away. He wasn't executed. But there's 120 guys in his cell. So if you can imagine, like, that there's so much disease in places like that. But Kabi taught me a lot before he passed on. So that was the beginning. That was us dropping the flag on witch doctor schools. And it creeps some people out, but it doesn't creep me out and doesn't creep them out. So that's good enough.
Yeah. Wow. And also, we'll just jump around the globe here. Do you have anything going on in Afghanistan right now?
Yep. We have a girls' school there. We've been operating that for about 3 years. And then when all the crazy happens with the Taliban taking over, and the Taliban were already kind of an influence in these areas because the city that we're located in is the former capital of the Taliban. So they've always had a presence. But after this crazy takeover recently, we went 3 weeks ago to the Taliban and asked them if we could start the school again. And they said, yes. And so there's 250 kids in chairs right now. These little girls are learning how to read. They've got books. And I just think I want us to just do more things that seem unlikely. And you don't have to go across an ocean to do that. Just go across the street. Just find one of your neighbors. If you're rolling into a season that people could be really lonely, just find a neighbor and ask them, you know, how you doing? Bring them a pie. If they don't want the pie, I do.
I love it. It's a good encouragement. Now, can we go back? So you're a lawyer for a while. How did you go from being a San Diego lawyer to getting into this unlikely stuff? Can we talk about like that moment or that transitional time?
Yeah, I bet it's the same way with you, Rob. Like one thing will lead to another thing, will lead to another thing. So I practiced law for 30 years. I lived in San Diego, but I worked in Seattle. And I flew up every morning and flew home for supper. Isn't that crazy? For 3 decades.
Were you flying your plane or someone else's?
No. Alaska Airlines.
Okay, got it.
And that would have been a mint to buy all those airplane tickets. But I had another idea. What if I start my own little airline in Canada? Because we've got some stuff going on there. So we code shared with Alaska so they could fly on my planes for free if I could fly on their planes for free. And in the total time that I had that airline, nobody ever flew on the president of Horizon flew on it once. But other than that, like nobody ever flew on it, but I flew on theirs 5 days a week. It was awesome. So we never made any money owning an airline, but we made bank on tickets.
Oh, that's amazing. And you've got a little place out in the woods, a little north of there, don't you?
Yeah.
Where you get away to.
Yep, about 150 miles north of Vancouver. And there isn't another home for 10,000 square miles. Like we're just in the bush. We're installing right now our third hydroelectric plant up there. And you just take the water out of the glacier and make your own electricity. So we grow our own food there, catch dinner in the rivers. Like it's just, you're just in the bush. It was before there was a TV show called Alone. We were. So I think for everybody, it doesn't need to be this big outlandish stuff, but to find a quiet spot on your own porch to collect your thoughts. I know you've been writing a great deal. And so to find a place, I know you put your head down one time on a vacation and said, I'm finishing this thing before I leave. Do you remember that?
I do. Yes. My wife and I spent about a month in Hawaii in February. And I remember calling you, we connected before the trip. And I said, yeah, you know, write 20,000 words. And you said, no, you're going to finish draft number one. Cause you said, you've got an idea. We need something we can fix.
Yeah.
And you said, look, when you get on that airplane, you're going to send me the first draft. And I was like terrified about the idea of, you know, making that big of a commitment. But I'm so glad that I did, because even though no one really ever read those words, just having someone that believed in me that I could do it and just having that deadline got me rolling.
And just having something that you need to hang a target on things. So you can hang a target on starting a school. You can hang a target on calling a friend of yours that you've just kind of drifted apart. Nobody's mad at each other. Just everybody got busy. And that's just beautiful, like living a life with resolve. And what it'll appear like to everybody else is that, wow, you get so much done. What actually is going on, you just decided what you're going to get done. You just decided, like I'm building the hydro plant, I'm baking the pie, I'm calling the friend, I'm whatever it is. But I think a life filled with decisions can be a really productive life. A life filled with distractions, not so much.
Tell me this, Bob. How you've got a lot going on in your life. I remember you telling me before, Rob, I try to keep it only 33 things. I
can only That's do 33. It. Good memory.
So tell me this. How you've got 1,000 options to come across your plate. You've got a lot of people that like to access you. You've got a lot of ideas. How do you make decisions on what are you going to move forward on and what are you not?
Yeah, what a great question. One of the first things that goes through this sieve for me is I used to do things that I wanted to work. And I always want, who wouldn't want something they're laboring at to not work? But I wanted, that was like the ultimate goal, was to have it work. And now I've switched a little bit and I want it to last. So the things that I'm doing at 62, like I want to last. And so I wave off on some people that some opportunities that maybe it'll work, but I don't think it'll last. I don't think it'll be the kind of lasting change, but doesn't mean it isn't important. It's just not important to me. And so being really picky about what you throw your energy into, but not so picky that you don't get anything done. So I've really just got like a day, like even today is just so filled with wonderful stuff. And then might be unimportant to somebody else, but getting out and rototilling where we're going to plant the crops, that's a really high value of mine. I don't want to just staff it out to somebody else. I want to go work the field because it'll feel more genuine if I do, if I have my fingerprints all over it. And it's not to boast. It's just that, hey, got a tractor, got a rototiller, figured out where the sprinkler heads are, aiming to miss a couple.
Absolutely. Now, I know that you're working on another book and it's about being distracted. Is that right?
Yes. It's called Undistracted. I thought that would be, always try to write the book you needed. And so for a guy who's easily distracted, I thought I would do that. It evidently hasn't been a very good book or hasn't worked very well because I went yesterday right at dawn for a little boat ride and I got back, put the boat at the dock and it just ran up the pier. And I was sitting reading in my chair and I looked way across the bay and I saw there's definitely another guy here in San Diego that's got a boat that looks just like mine. It turns out I got off the boat. I didn't tie it up. I just drifted all the way across the bay. I was thinking, wow, what are the chances? And then I was like, no. So yeah, I got a good swim in too.
So it's a book that you wrote for yourself.
Yes. Now I need to read it. Now I need to incorporate it into my life because who gets off a boat and doesn't tie it up? I was just so giddy about whatever it was I was thinking about. I just got distracted, I guess.
That is amazing. And well, I can't wait to read it because I'm certainly someone who's easily distracted. I think there's a lot of us that are. So the relevance is very high there. Okay. Something else I want to ask you about. I've heard you say before that you are usually only a quarter of a twist from where you want to be. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. Sometimes people think they need to make big changes in their life. There was a young guy that read one of my books evidently, and he said, you know, Bob, I read your books and I've made a 360 degree change in my life. And I'm like, buddy, you're right back where you started. Go 180, just divide that in half. But most people don't need to do a 180 in their life. They just need to move a couple degrees. If you do a 45 on your life, how about that? Like Delta Airlines decided that they, instead of pushing the airplanes back into the alley and then doing a 90 degree turn and then detaching, they said, we're just going to push it back on a 45 and let the pilot figure it out. Isn't that awesome? They Amazing. Saved $1 billion just by going
$1 billion
instead of 45 instead of 90. And so I think instead of making these big abrupt changes that give you whiplash, just to say, what about just a little quarter twist? Just give it a bit of a twist and see what'll happen in your life. And that's it's just a little bit more kind to yourself. It's a little bit more self-aware. It doesn't like say, well, I'm chucking everything I've done up until now. I would just say, I'm just going to be a new creation, new day, new Bob. And to say, what's that quarter twist? If you want to do a quarter twist in a relationship, just go a little deeper. If you want to do a quarter twist. Well, what have you done a quarter twist in, Rob?
That's a good question. Well, I've done a quarter twist at the way I spend my time. So for the past 10 years, I've been working on a business. I've got a little landscaping company and I've been putting so much time and energy into it. And over the past year, I've started spending more and more time on things that I like, personal projects. And it's been such a fun thing. I got in hustle and grind mode for so long. You know, I think a lot of people subscribe to hustle culture and they think if you're not working 90 hours a week, if it's not really hard, if you're not really burnt out, then you're not really making progress. And I began to kind of take my foot off the gas in the past couple of years. And really, as I was confronted with the idea that this lifestyle is burning me out. And I gave myself permission to do a few things that I really wanted to do, some fun things, started writing, started putting my thoughts together, and just a little bit at a time. And it has been profoundly impactful for my own sense of being, self-worth, and also the way that I see the people around me as I have time to just think about what's going on in my life. So that's
bingo. I think just changing up the cadence a little bit can be really effective. That would be just another quarter twist to just say, I'm going to just change the cadence a little bit and see what happens.
It's been a beautiful change. And you know, I started on my writing journey. I know you've been writing. When did you write your first book?
12 years ago. Crazy, huh?
You're probably 5 iterations of Bob since then, huh?
Yeah, I've changed quite a bit. And I'm still changing. That's the promise. Like my faith guides myself in that direction, that promise that we'll be constantly changing and being a new, better, more humble, more fully present version, maybe one that's more self-aware than all the earlier versions, not as judgmental of people. So when you open yourself up to people, you'll have some people that are just dealing with their skeletons in their closet. They've got their own demons that they're doing. I just am going to be undistracted by those things. If somebody, I put my cell phone number in the back of almost 3 million books, and I get a lot of phone calls every day. And every once in a while, there'll be somebody that's, you know, got some bogeys that they're chasing in their life, and they are still working on their people skills a little bit, and they don't know what to say. So sometimes they reach up on the stupid shelf and like just say something mean or something weird. But I just assume they've got probably a lot of things going on to be at that place where they would say main things. Does that make sense? Make an assumption, a beautiful one, that they've got some stuff that they're working through. And so, yeah, me too. I'm just not mean when I'm working through it.
I know availability is a huge deal for you. Obviously, you put back of 3 million books. Your availability is how you and I connected, you know, a year ago, which I'm so thankful for. How do you balance that availability with also being present with the people that you love the most, your family, your close friends? What does that look like?
Yeah, we made kind of some guardrails around meal times, that if there was food involved, that I wouldn't pick up the phone. But the rest of the time is kind of pretty free ranging. There's some people that aren't kind of thinking time zones that might call it. I'd say 5 days a week, I'll get a call at 3:30 in the morning. And it's somebody that's up at 6:30 in the morning on the East Coast. And they're just either not thinking or they don't care. And I'll let that one ride. I'm not gonna do that. Yeah, because I won't be the best version of me anyway. I'll be wondering and half the time they're just schnockered or they're just like that. It's not an emergency. So if somebody calls back a couple times, then I'll assume that something important's going on. And when they miss me on the phone, there's an email that they get, and I check my emails. I bet I get 500 a day. I answer everybody usually within an hour or two. So that kind of availability is helped keep my feet firmly planted on the ground, knowing my fallibility, the hope that I have that other people would be available to me, maybe as available as I've been to other people, but not putting that expectation that's unrealistic on people. But it's been a really humble practice.
Where did you learn this availability? What made you value it so much?
Yeah, you know what? It was a guy a long time ago. He died way too soon. He was a Christian music, like one of the contemporary Christian music pioneers. His name was Keith Green. And I was in college. It must have been 1977. I wrote him a letter, and this is before the internet. He wrote me back a letter, and it only had three sentences in it. And I was just so impressed that he took time to write me three sentences. I just decided, I mean, gosh, what am I, 40 years later? I don't know how many years later, 45? I write everybody three sentences back. And the reason is because a guy who was really busy and was really popular at the time took time to write me three sentences, and I felt like a boss when he did. And I just want other people to feel like a boss. And again, there'd be the odd person that's just kind of still working out some rough edges. And so they'll say, you should have written to me more, or you should have, or they'll want to argue about something I'd put on social media. And I don't try to think bad things or good things. I just assume that they're as insecure as I am. And they're just working out their insecurity in a different way that I am.
Wonderful. Okay. All right. Here's another question for you. What's something that's important to you now that wasn't, say, 10 years ago?
Well, I've always wanted grandkids. I couldn't see it 10 years ago because, you know, 10 years ago, our kids were in college and mid-college. And so that's just growing in importance. And it isn't just the idea of having these little ones, but the realization that there are generations. I live next door to my dad. And so we have a one generation that's now 94. And then the next generation, I'm 62. And our kids are like early 30s. And they're making people that are 2 and 3 years old. It's just kind of neat. Like, when will you have four generations in the same place? And so that's just kind of this reminder to me constantly of just doing a really good job with what we've been entrusted with. And that we get to actually make a couple moves for this next generation. Some of the things I do now with like planting crops and cattle and horses and all that, then maybe that'll be something that'll give them some enjoyment. We're hardly Yellowstone. Nobody's getting a brand on their chest, but it is actually awful fun. So that staying curious, I want to be that guy. I paddleboard around because I want to keep my balance. But that isn't the only reason, the only area I want to keep balance in. I just want to keep balance in some other things too. And I think kind of getting back to the land during the summers is great. And if you have a day job and you're listening, and that's honorable work, do that. And you can still like plant a garden in your backyard. I don't care if you're in an apartment, get a bucket, throw a couple seeds in it. You'll feel so great. You'll just be curious. You'll just be connecting. And I'm not the tree hugger guy, but I actually feel this responsibility and this connection with this environment that we've been given. And so doing things that feel responsible and engaging, that's a great way to spend a Friday.
I couldn't agree more. I definitely come alive and I'm in the woods, connected to nature. That is my place to recharge.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, Bob. So here's another question for you. You, a long time ago, you wrote about this in Love Does. You and your kids, and I'm guessing you got some of this from writing to Keith Green. You guys wrote some letters to people, world leaders. And you got some responses. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, totally. It was right after 9/11. I wanted my kids to make more sense, be less afraid than they were of the things happening around them. And so we had them write to every world leader. And they wrote a letter and said that they introduced themselves and invited everybody over to our house. And they said, if you can't make it over to our house, can we come over to yours? And we got 27 yeses, which is so crazy. There's 27 leaders said yes. So we pulled the kids out of school and we bought a bunch of cheap tickets when British Airways opens up a new route, like to Germany or to somewhere over the seas, they offer $100 round trip tickets. And so we would just buy those like pork belly futures. We would just get loads of these cheap tickets, and I eat $200 of pretzels. So it was just really, really a fun way to have them experience the world around them and then the people. And it was so, I think, engaging for the people that were thinking about this. When they receive the letter, they go like, wow, here are these three scrappy kids from San Diego that are pretty young, I think 7, 9, and 11. And they've said that they want to meet with us at my house. And so I'll say yes. And so people were just so generous with their time people are like just magnificent. I know people, some people have gotten burned and, you know, have met some truly awful people along the way, but I just don't want to get cynicism, give the cynicism the microphone. I teach at Pepperdine Law School, but also San Quentin Penitentiary. I've been doing it for years, and gosh, I found some of the men there to be just the kindest people. They've done some truly awful things in the past, but that was like a really bad 15 minutes. I'm just talking about the rest of their life and not making excuses. They're getting punished. I mean, there's the most of the guys in my class are lifers, but I've found a kindness and a resolve and interest in me that sometimes escapes more normal circumstances. So we've got, think about this for a second. There's 7.5 billion people here, pushing 8 billion people alive today on the earth. There have only been 107 billion people that have ever lived, best guess. And so just call it like 10% of everybody who's ever lived by any count are alive right now. Isn't that crazy?
That is amazing.
And so what I want to do is engage that. If you're curious about the world, gosh, it's out there. Engage it, send a couple emails, meet a couple people. You could find a big shot, but what if you find an unschooled ordinary person? Those are the people that Jesus was always looking for. It was just unschooled ordinary. Like me, like you, just ordinary. And then develop a real friendship, not like a Facebook friendship, but just a real friendship. If you can't meet in person, we got Zoom now. And I don't know. I just want to be bedazzled by the people that are on this marble as we're moving through the universe without getting like, you know, too out there. We're going at 25,000 miles an hour through the universe while we're spinning at 1200 miles an hour. That's just crazy stuff. And I just want, and there's, it's the ultimate diamond lane. There's a 7.5 billion people in the vehicle.
Oh, that's amazing. You put it, you say it like that. It is pretty phenomenal. So Bob, you have this wonder about you where you're very captivated by the world and what is around you. Is this something that's always been there? Is this a born thing, or is this something that you've learned from other people? Tell me about kind of your relationship with wonder and being captivated.
Yeah, I think I picked this up. My earliest memory would be of my grandparents. They were always just curious about everything. I had a grandfather that was a fireman on the docks in San Francisco. And he worked that graveyard shift for 40 years and never put out a fire. I don't even know if he knew how to, but I know he was really good at loving me. They used to pay me room rent. Anytime they walked in my room in their house, they'd put a nickel in this little drawer. And I'd run into their house and run upstairs to see how much room rent. And it wasn't like the cash kind of thing, although that was cool and you can get a candy bar. But it was just that they were thinking of me. Like every time they went in there, they put another nickel because this is your room. Like these are the stories that'll be told. These are the ones that'll be passed on. It's an example of something that lasts. And so those are the things that I'm trying to do, things that'll last. And so go buy the dirt bike if you want, but why not learn with one of your kids how to pop wheelies, which is pretty awesome. And I'm not very good at it, but I try several times a week. I take my dirt bike out and I just try to see, can I get that thing up in the air without flipping over? And at 62, I think I'm just coming into my prime.
Oh, that's good. Now, Bob, you're a pilot. You've been flying for a while, right?
Yeah. For that, that's kind of the way to get in and out of this place. You could either do a weirdly long boat trip or you could fly a seaplane in and land it. And I'm opting like just the whimsy of landing a plane on the water and taking it off. Like, how cool is that? We used to have somebody that would just a guy who owned an airplane would drop us off. And then I thought that's where the idea got, like, I could start an airline. What if I owned a whole slug of these things and we could just kind of break even by hauling loggers around and people in and out of inlets. And then we made a run at it. So that would be that example of curiosity. But just because I did the airplane thing doesn't make me like Mr. Aviation. Like I want to plant some crops today too. I'm curious about that, where I'm curious about raising Angus cattle in these Highlands, the Scottish Highlands, the ones that are fuzzy with bangs. We've got a bunch of those we're breeding. And I'm curious about the horses. I'm curious about the people that are at camp having a really unique experience. So I would say the thing that knits all of these like seemingly random ideas together is this idea of curiosity and wonder, and just living with a keen desire for both. And so I just told you what maybe some of the people that are listening didn't know. There's 107 billion people that have ever lived. Go check it up. Wikipedia wouldn't lie to you. And so to just be bedazzled by that, think how many stars there are in the universe. That'll be a big, big number. Think about how many friends you've ever like known. I mean, really, really known. And then I would pick up the phone and call one. So I wouldn't just live with my head up in the stars. I would find out about them. I'm curious about them. But then I'd boil it down to like, what am I going to do? Who am I going to call when I'm stuck in traffic? Hands-free. Do it responsibly. But who is it that I'm going to connect with that I haven't? Who's a leader? The guy with no sideburns in North Korea? Like, is there a way to engage that rather than just watch it unfold in the news? So I just translated my books, one of the books into Korean, and sent it to him. And I'm not expecting him to swing by at Thanksgiving, but I feel like I have a chair at the table now. I wrote him a note. I had it translated into Korean and I sent it. I feel like why let the UN have all the fun? Something happened in world events yesterday. And because I'm like a safe guy, I could call the person that was making the decision about somebody's life and I could connect. Like if you're a safe person, then you can actually do an immense amount, much more than you can if you were banging trash lids together. But there's a role for all of that. So some people, the way they're wired is with a militancy, and I'm more wired with resolve. I'd rather be somebody's friend because I could pick them up and I say, no, I know you're making a big decision today, and say something nice about that. I would prefer access over being right. Like I'm not trying to win arguments anymore.
Yeah, I've heard you say, if you have the choice to be right or to be kind, always choose being kind.
I think so. And it's hard to do sometimes with all the rush and all the pressures that we all have, but I think we can do it anyway. I mean, you're a kind guy, so just do what you're doing. I want what you're having.
Here, I got a number for you, Bob. The number is 22,911. Do you know what number that is?
No, what is that? How many days we get?
That's how many days you've been alive.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. I'll take it.
Look, I Googled fun things about Bob Goff. It had that number down and it said that you were born on a Sunday and that people who are born on a Sunday are usually bright, creative, bold, and leaders.
Okay. Go team. The crazy thing when you take that 22,000 number, when you put that up against the average length of somebody's life, it's 27,373 days. Don't ask me why I know that, but like 27,373. So I'm in my last 4,000 days. And just be mindful of where you are in the arc. And if you're, 20 years old, that's awesome. Like you got some more days in front of you probably, but to approach him with the same kind of curiosity and zeal and engagement. You don't need to do big things like go across the ocean. Do even bigger things like asking a friend out for coffee today. Like you're really asking them, like, what's going on? What's the thing underneath the thing? And most of us are a little bit like that Russian nesting doll where there's layers, like there's a thing underneath that. Like all my enthusiasm is because I'm an insecure guy. And so where did the insecurity come from? Like this feeling that I would be left alone, I would be abandoned. And where did that come from? Like some crazy stuff happened and it got this little version of me convinced I would be abandoned. And so where does that go? And so to just, I'm not saying endlessly get wrapped around this, wheel of introspection, but I would say like, just say, where did that come from? What's the return address? Why am I doing? Why did that kid write a mean letter or say something kind of snarky? Why did the cop pull you over and kind of have that attitude that wasn't very engaging. And you know you did wrong, but you didn't need the attitude. And then just say like, well, yeah, maybe a friend of his got killed. Maybe somebody that was, you know, in the line of duty, something awful happened. And so when they walk up to your car, they don't know you from Adam. And so there's all of that is engaging. And some people don't deal with their endorphins well, that they just, they turn kind of mean or a little curt. And maybe they grew up in a place where that was how they dealt with each other. So I'm not trying to get inside everybody's head, but I think the path to kindness is a recognition that we're all have a some ish that we're dealing with.
I agree. Now, on kind of that note, you come across as a very happy-go-lucky, very cheerful person. How do you deal with disappointment? How do you deal with expectations not being met? What's that like for you?
I think I don't park there. I think that we all have disappointments, hundreds every day if you were to slow down and count them. But I think I don't spend a lot of time. I don't make it a campsite. Some people do. They overly identify with the setbacks and disappointments in their life. They're still back with, you know, the person that broke up with them or the boss that wasn't fair or whatever. I just don't camp out there. The boat floated away yesterday. I swam out, got it. The
boat. You really gone. Swam out and got the boat?
Yeah, yeah. I'm not spending a lot of time thinking about what happened or what could have been different. Or I want to learn from these things because I don't want to go swim. It's a little chilly. But that idea of to say, I want to see it. Then I want to understand it so I can bring it to God and just to say, hey, can you help me fix this? Like the things that make me short or the thing that make me anxious, or if maybe you're listening and you have a sense of scarcity, you just think you're going to lose it all and be living in the back of a Prius. P.S. You can't. It ain't big enough. But you still have that sense like, oh my gosh, of impending doom. I would just pull on that thread a little bit and see what it's connected to. And then maybe use a counselor to help you do that. Somebody who's actually good at helping people sort stuff out. That's just smart.
Absolutely. So we're getting here to kind of the crux of what my podcast is about, which is it's called The Adventure Cure. And the whole point of the conversations that I want to have is giving people really permission and encouragement to take bold steps towards things that are uncertain in order to live a life that's more meaningful, right? I feel like a lot of people kind of sit on the sidelines and they're afraid to take that first step. They want to stay safe, but then that safety often leads to kind of a mundacity, a mundane life. So can we talk about what it looks like? What kind of risks, what's one story of a risk, something that was really scary that you move forward in and it really unlocks something within you?
Yeah, I can think of the first thing that popped to mind was sailing to Hawaii. I've done it a couple times. I wasn't that good of a sailor, but it just seemed like a great challenge to just found a crummy boat, entered the Transpac race, I didn't know the difference between true and magnetic north. I was just like, which is enough to miss the entire island chain if you pick wrong. And I did.
You missed Hawaii?
Yeah, like, where's the volcano? And it turns out I was 800 miles north of the volcanoes.
Amazing.
Yeah, I just didn't know. I'm not a detail guy. Finding things that will challenge you, like learning to ride horses is kind of fun. Maybe even you could say interpersonally, could you deal with somebody who was kind of mean and off-putting and deal with them with kindness? You could say, you know, I blocked you, but so we won't unfortunately be able to communicate further, but I truly want to wish you well in your adventure and that you'll find some really neat people around you. I'm sure you already have them. So instead of saying something snarky or whatever, to return to somebody who was mean, give some kindness to them. And it isn't as some people in a whacked way, they have some Bible verse in their mind. It's like heaping burning coals on their head. That is just so Yellowstone. Like, I think what we need to do is just be kind because like people have been kind to us. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, Bob, you've got so much wisdom. We could go on for hours, but I'll try to land this plane pretty soon. So here's another question that I try to ask all my listeners. And that's, if you had a billboard that was posted all over the world, and obviously in every language, up for a year, what would the billboard say?
Yeah. You know what I would say? Two words. I'd say, you're welcome. And people would say, is this somebody being polite, saying like, you know, thank you, and then saying you're welcome, or somebody just knowing you're welcome here, like you're actually welcome to this life of yours. You're welcome in places that you didn't think you were welcome. The places that you actually aren't welcome, that they'll let you know, to say, you know what, you actually are welcome, just not right now. Not with these people, that they've got some things that they need to overcome in their own life. But you are still welcome there, just not right now. This isn't the time and place for that. Now, you can go say, you know, I'm coming anyway. But that for me isn't my go-to. I'm not going to force myself into a situation where I'm not welcome. I'm not going to try to press it. I'm glad some other people have historically. Some of our great civil rights leaps forward have been because people said, no, I'm not waiting for permission anymore. Mm-hmm. But for me, I would say equally to your welcome is that you have permission, that we aren't going to, I just assume that I have permission to write to people. I assume I have right permission to be kind when they're not. I assume I have permission to be frustrated that there's things that happen in life. So it isn't just this Pollyanna worldview that I think I have permission, but I also have permission to not stay that way, that I don't need to like put somebody in the doghouse or in the penalty box for a long period of time because of that. Yeah, I think this that would be it. You're welcome and you have permission.
Wonderful, wonderful. Bob, do you have any other final words or encouragements for our listeners?
No, I just hope people write down what they're learning. There might have been something, Rob, that you said that connected with them, and write that stuff down. Don't trust your memory. It's not as good a friend as you think, because you'll just forget. Like I remember talking on the cell phone yesterday, and while I was looking for my cell phone, <I'm> like, yeah, we've all done that.
And I did it yesterday too. Yeah.
Yes. So I think to just say, I'm going to write down the things that ping you, things that you say that you think are funny or catch your a choice of words. Somebody said something that got your attention. Just write that down and then find a quiet spot to hover over that a little bit. That's one of the practices I have in the morning, is when I'm not swimming after my boat, is to hover over some of the things I wrote down the day before. Because I don't want to just be like, how was Rob's podcast? Oh, it was great. I want to think like, why? What did I like about it? What did I learn about it?
Wonderful.
So man, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Man, I really am thankful for your time. I know you're a busy man, but I'm thankful for your time. I'm thankful for your friendship. Can't wait to read your new book. What's the new book called, Bob?
Undistracted.
Undistracted.
I should change the subtitle to Guy Swims After Boat, Not Tied Up.
Oh, that's great. And to find more about Bob, just Google him. He's on all the social stuff. Y'all know where to find him. But Bob, I really appreciate you. And I hope you have a great weekend at the Oaks.
Yeah, thanks a million. All right, keep listening to this podcast, everybody.
All right, see you, Bob.
All right, y'all. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Bob Goff. Bob's books are so easy to read and are guaranteed to change the way that you're living your daily life. If you don't want to change, don't pick them up. Learn how to give yourself more grace, to take more bold chances, and live a bigger story. Bob's kindness and adventurous spirit has already completely changed the trajectory of my life, and I hope he can do the same for you. Thank you, all of you, for listening. We are still in the early days of this podcast, and we would love it, absolutely love it, if you could help us get the word out. Take that subscribe button and tell a friend so we can get the stories out to the world. Till next time, much love from me, your host, Rob Trependahl.